Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we travel to Israel. Israel is the only Jewish state on earth. This ancient country is in the Middle East and is bordered by the Dead Sea, Lebanon, Palestine, Jordan, Syria, and Egypt. The city of Jericho in Israel is one of the oldest cities on earth, first occupied more than 11,000 years ago. For further information about Israel for children, I suggest easyscienceforkids.com/allaboutisrael. Our first tale is about someone you've probably heard about, but did you know he saved a unicorn, a phoenix bird, and a giant when the flood came? Here is The Giant of the Flood. Just before the world was drowned, all the animals gathered in front of the ark, and Father Noah carefully inspected them. Then the various creatures began to march forward into the ark. Father Noah watched them closely. He seemed troubled. "I wonder," he said to himself, "how shall I obtain a unicorn, and how shall I get it into the ark?"
"I can bring thee a unicorn, Father Noah,"
he heard in a voice of thunder, and turning round he saw the giant Og.
"But thou must agree to save me too from the flood."
"Begone," cried Noah. "Thou art a demon, not a human being. I can have no dealings with thee."
"Pity me," whined the giant. "See how my figure is shrinking. Once I was so tall that I could drink water from the clouds and toast fish at the sun. I fear not that I shall be drowned, but that all the food will be destroyed and that I shall perish of hunger."
Noah, however, only smiled, but he grew serious again when Og brought a unicorn. It was as big as a mountain, although the giant said it was the smallest he could find. It lay down in front of the ark, and Noah saw by that action that he must save it. For some time he was puzzled what to do, but at last a bright idea struck him. He attached the huge beast to the ark by a rope fastened to its horn so that it could swim alongside and be fed. Og seated himself on a mountain near at hand and watched the rain pouring down. Faster and faster it fell in torrents until the rivers overflowed and the waters began to rise rapidly on the land and sweep all things away. Father Noah stood gloomily before the door of the ark until the water reached his neck. Then it swept him inside. The door closed with a bang, and the ark rose gallantly on the flood and began to move along. The unicorn swam alongside, and as it passed Og, the giant jumped onto its back.
"See, Father Noah," he cried with a huge chuckle, "you'll have to save me after all. I will snatch all the food you put through the window for the unicorn."
Noah saw that it was useless to argue with Og, who might indeed sink the ark with his tremendous strength.
"I will make a bargain with thee," he shouted from a window. "I will feed thee, but thou must promise to be a servant to my descendants."
Og was very hungry, so he accepted the conditions and devoured his first breakfast. The rain continued to fall in great big sheets that shut out the light of day. Inside the ark, however, all was bright and cheerful. For Noah had collected the most beautiful precious stones of the earth and had used them for the windows. Their radiance illumined the whole of the three stories in the ark. Some of the animals were troublesome, and Noah got no sleep at all. The lion had a bad attack of fever. In a corner, a bird slept the whole of the time. This was the phoenix.
"Wake up," said Noah one day. "It's feeding time."
"Thank you," returned the bird. "I saw thou wert busy, Father Noah, so I would not trouble thee."
"Thou art a good bird," said Noah, much touched. "Therefore thou shalt never die."
The phoenix after that time never died, but rose from its own ashes and lived forever. One day the rain ceased, the clouds rolled away, and the sun shone brilliantly again. How strange the world looked! It was like a vast ocean. Nothing but water could be seen anywhere, and only one or two of the highest mountaintops peeped above the flood. All the world was drowned, and Noah gazed on the desolate scene from one of the windows with tears in his eyes. Og, riding gaily on the unicorn behind the ark, was quite happy.
"Ha, ha!" he laughed gleefully. "I shall be able to eat and drink just as much as I like now, and shall never be troubled by those tiny little creatures, the mortals."
"Be not so sure," said Noah. "Those tiny mortals shall be thy masters, and shall outlive thee and the whole race of giants and demons." The giant did not relish this prospect. He knew that whatever Noah prophesied would come true, and he was so sad that he ate no food for 2 days and began to grow smaller and thinner. He became more and more unhappy as day by day the water subsided and the mountains began to appear. At last, the ark rested on Mount Ararat, and Og's long ride came to an end.
"I will soon leave thee, Father Noah," he said. "I shall wander round this world to see what is left of it."
"Thou canst go, not until I permit thee," said Noah. "Hast thou forgotten our compact so soon? Thou must be my servant. I have work for thee." Giants are not fond of work, and Og, who was the father of all the giants, was particularly lazy. He cared only to eat and sleep, but he knew he was in Noah's power, and he shed bitter tears when he saw the land appear again. "Stop," commanded Noah. "Dost thou wish to drown the world once more with thy big tears?" So Og sat on a mountain and rocked from side to side, weeping silently to himself. He watched the animals leave the ark and had to do all the hard work when Noah's children built houses. Daily he complained that he was shrinking to the size of the mortals, for Noah said there was not too much food. One day Noah said to him, "Come with me, Og. I am going round the world. I am commanded to plant fruit and flowers to make the earth beautiful. I need thy help." For many days they wandered all over the earth, and Og was compelled to carry the heavy bag of seeds. The last thing Noah planted was the grapevine.
"What is this, food or drink?" asked Og.
"Both," replied Noah. "It can be eaten, or its juice made into wine." And as he planted it, he blessed the grape. "Be thou," he said, "a plant pleasing to the eye. Bear fruit that will be food for the hungry, and a health-giving drink to the thirsty and sick." Og grunted.
"I'll offer up sacrifice to this wonderful fruit," he said. "May I not do so now that our labors are over?"
Noah agreed, and the giant brought a sheep, a lion, a pig, and a monkey. First he slaughtered the sheep, then the lion.
"When a man shall taste but a few drops of the wine," he said, "he shall be as harmless as a sheep. When he takes a little more, he shall be as strong as a lion."
Then Og began to dance around the plant, and he killed the pig and the monkey. Noah was very much surprised.
"I am giving thy descendants 2 extra blessings, said Og, chuckling.
He rolled over and over on the ground in great glee, and then said,
"When a man shall drink too much of the juice of the wine, then shall he become a beast like the pig, and if then he still continues to drink, he shall behave foolishly like a monkey."
That is why, unto this day, too much wine makes a man silly. Og himself became king of Bashan, but he forgot his compact with Noah, and instead of helping the Israelites to obtain Canaan, he opposed them.
"I will kill them all with one blow," he declared.
Exerting all his enormous strength, he uprooted a mountain, and raising it high above his head, he prepared to drop it on the camp of the Israelites and crush it. But a wonderful thing happened. The mountain was full of grasshoppers and ants who had bored millions of tiny holes into it. When King Og raised the great mass, it crumbled in his hands and fell over his head and round his neck like a collar. He tried to pull it off, but his teeth became entangled in the mass. As he danced about in rage and pain, Moses, the leader of the Israelites, approached him. Moses was a tiny man compared with Og. With a mighty effort, he jumped into the air, and raising the sword, he managed to strike the giant on the ankle and wound him mortally. Thus, after many years, did the terrible giant of the flood perish for breaking his word to Father Noah. The next story is about 2 household pets. Here is The Quarrel of the Cat and Dog. In the childhood of the world, when Adam named all the animals and ruled over them, the dog and the cat were the greatest of good friends. They were inseparable chums in their recreations, faithful partners in their transactions, and devoted comrades in all their adventures, their pleasures and their sorrows. They lived together, shared each other's food, and confided their secrets to none but themselves. It seemed that no possible difference would ever arise to cause trouble between them. Then winter came. It was a new experience to them to feel the cold wind cutting through their skins and making them shiver. The dismal prospect of the leafless trees and the hard, cold ground weighed heavily upon their hearts, and, worse still, there was less food. The scarcity grew serious, and hunger plunged them into unhappiness and despair. Doggy became melancholy, while Pussy grew peevish, then petulant, and finally developed a horrid temper.
"We can't go on like this," moaned the cat. "I think we had better dissolve our partnership. We can't find enough to share when we are together, but separately we ought each to discover sufficient forage in our hunting. Meow."
"I think I can help you because I am the stronger," said the dog. Pussy did not contradict, but she thought the dog a bit of a fool and too good-natured. She knew herself to be sly and intended to rely on that quality for her future sustenance. Doggy was deeply hurt at Pussy's desire to end their happy compact, but he said quietly, "Of course, if you insist on parting, I will agree."
"It is agreed, then," purred Pussy.
"Where will you go?" asked Doggy.
"To the house of Adam," promptly replied the cat, who had evidently made up her mind. "There are mice there. Adam will be grateful if I clear them away. I shall have food to eat."
"Very well," assented the dog. "I will wander further afield." Then the cat said solemnly,
"We must each take an oath never to cross the other's path. That is the proper way to terminate a business agreement. The serpent says so, and he is the wisest of all the animals."
They put their right forepaws together and gravely repeated an oath never to interfere with each other by going into the same place. Then they parted. Doggy trotted off sorrowfully, with his head hanging down. Once he looked back, but Puss did not do so. She scampered off as fast as she could to the house of Adam.
"Father Adam," she cried, "I have come to be your slave. You are troubled with mice in the house. I can rid you of them, and I want nothing else for my services."
"Thou art welcome," said Father Adam, stroking Pussy's warm fur. Puss rubbed her head against his feet, purred contentedly, and ran off to look for mice. She found plenty and soon grew fat and comfortable. Adam treated her kindly, and she soon forgot all about her former comrade. Poor Doggy did not fare so well. Indeed, he had a rough time. He wandered aimlessly about over the frozen ground and could not find the slightest scrap of food. After 3 days, weary, paw sore, and dispirited, he came to a wolf's lair and begged for shelter. The wolf took pity on him, gave him some scraps of food, and permitted him to sleep in the lair. Doggy was most thankful, and sleeping with his ears on the alert, he heard stealthy footsteps in the night. He told the wolf, "Drive the intruders away," said his host in a surly tone. Doggy went out obediently to do so, but the marauders were wild animals, and they nearly killed him. He was lucky to escape with his life. After bathing his wounds at a pool in the early morning, he wandered all day long, but again could find nothing. Toward night, when he could scarcely drag his famished and wounded body along, he saw a monkey in a tree. "Kind monkey," he pleaded, "give me shelter for the night. I am exhausted and starving."
"Go away, go away, go away,"
chattered the monkey, jumping and swinging swiftly from branch to branch, moving his lips quickly and opening and shutting his eyes comically. Doggy hesitated, and, to frighten him away, the monkey pulled coconuts from the tree and pelted him. Poor Doggy crawled miserably away. "What shall I do?" he moaned. Hearing the bleating of some sheep, he made his way to them and asked them to take compassion on him.
"We will," they replied, "if you will keep watch over us and tell us when the wolf comes."
Doggy agreed willingly, and after he had devoured some food, he stretched himself to sleep like a faithful watchdog with one eye open. In the middle of the night, he heard the wolves approaching, and anxious to serve the sheep who had treated him so kindly, he sprang to his feet and began to bark loudly. This aroused the sheep, who awoke and started to run in all directions. Some of them ran right into the pack of wolves and were killed and eaten. Poor Doggy was nearly heartbroken. "It's my fault," he wailed. "I barked too soon. Oh, what an unhappy creature I am. I shall keep away from all animals now." Once again, he set off on his travels. Whenever he met an animal, he ran off in the opposite direction. He had to make his journey by the loneliest paths and the most unfrequented routes, and the difficulty of finding food grew steadily greater. At last he grew so weak and thin that he hardly had strength to crawl, and he had several narrow escapes from falling a prey to ferocious beasts. One night he came to a house and begged a morsel of food. It was given, and during the night he woke the man and warned him that wild animals were making a raid. The man jumped up, seized his bow and arrow, and drove the thieves away. Then he patted Doggy. "Good dog," he said. "You are a wise animal. Stay with me always. You will find Father Adam kind." "Father Adam," cried Doggy in alarm, "I must not stay here." "Nonsense. I say you must," answered Adam, and Doggy was compelled to obey. In the morning, Pussy learned that the dog had joined the household, and she complained to Adam.
"The dog has violated the oath he swore not to come to the place where I am," she said.
"He did not know you were here," said Adam, desirous of maintaining peace. "He is very useful. I want him to remain. He won't hurt you. There is ample room for both."
"No, there isn't, meow," said Puss, spitefully arching up her back and getting cross. "He broke his oath. He's a wicked creature. You dare not overlook his offense."
Poor Doggy stood dejectedly apart with his tail between his legs. "I didn't know it was Adam's house, and I was so hungry and miserable and tired," he said. But Pussy would not be pacified. She thrust out her ugly claws and tried to scratch her former partner. The dog kept out of her way as much as possible, but she quarreled with him at every opportunity, and at last he determined to tolerate her conduct no longer. "I must leave you, Father Adam," he said. "Pussy is making my life unbearable."
"But I want you," said Adam.
"I'm sorry," said Doggy firmly, "but it is really impossible for me to continue in your service. I've got another situation in the house of Seth. He wants me to."
"Won't you make friends with Pussy?" asked Adam.
"With pleasure, if she will let me, but she won't."
"You blame each other," said Adam, losing his patience. "I can't make you out. You look like you will be quarreling forever."
Adam's words have proved true. Ever since that time, the cat and dog have failed to agree, and Pussy will never consent to be friendly again with Doggy. This last story is an Israeli version of a favorite fairy tale. Here is The Red Slipper. Rosie Red was a sweet little girl with beautiful blue eyes, soft pink cheeks, and glorious ruddy gold hair of the tinge that artists love to paint. Her mother died the day she was born, but her grandmother looked after her with such tender care that Rosie Red regarded her as her mother. She was very happy, was Rosie Red. All day long she sang as she tripped gaily about the house or the woods that surrounded it, and so melodious was her voice that the birds gathered on the trees to listen to her and to encourage her to continue by daintily chirruping whenever she ceased. Merrily, Rosie Red performed all the little duties her grandmother called upon her to do, and on festivals she was allowed to wear a beautiful pair of red leather slippers, her father's gift to her on her first birthday. Now, although neither she nor her father knew it, they were magic slippers which grew larger as her feet grew. Rosie Red was only a child, and so did not know that slippers don't usually grow. Her grandmother knew the secret of the slippers, but she did not tell, and her father had become too moody and too deeply absorbed in his own thoughts and affairs to notice anything. One day, Rosie Red remembered it only too sadly. She returned from the woods to find her grandmother gone and three strange women in the house. She stopped suddenly in the midst of her singing, and her cheeks turned pale, for she did not like the appearance of the strangers.
"Who are you?" she asked.
"I am your new mother," answered the eldest of the three, "and these are my daughters, your two new sisters." Rosie Red trembled with fear. They were all three so ugly, and she began to cry. Her new sisters scolded her for that and would have beaten her had not her father appeared. He spoke kindly, telling her he had married again because he was lonely and that her stepmother and stepsisters would be good to her. But Rosie Red knew different. She hastened away to her own little room and hid her slippers, of which she was very proud.
"They have turned my dear granny out of doors, and they will take from me my beautiful slippers," she sobbed.
After that, Rosie Red sang no more. She became a somber girl and a drudge. The birds could not understand. They followed her through the woods, but she was silent, as if she had been stricken dumb, and her eyes always seemed eager to be shedding tears. Alas, she was too busy to notice her feathered friends. She had to collect firewood for the house, to draw water from the well and struggle along with the heavy bucket, whose weight made her arms and her back ache with pain. Sometimes, too, her white arms were scarred with bruises, for her cruel and selfish stepsisters did not hesitate to beat her. Often they went out to parties or to dances, and on these occasions she had to act as their maid and help them to dress. Rosie Red did not mind. She was only happy when they were out of the house. Then only did she sing softly to herself, and the birds came to listen. And thus many unhappy years passed by. Once, when her father was away from home, her stepsisters went off to a wedding dance. They told her not to forget to draw water from the well, and warned her that if she forgot, as she did the last time, they would beat her without mercy when they returned. So Rosie Red, tired though she was, went out in the darkness to draw water. She lowered the bucket, but the cord broke, and the pail fell to the bottom of the well. She ran back home for a long stick with a hook at the end of it to recover the bucket, and as she put it into the water, she sang,
"Swing and sweep till all does cling, and to the surface safely bring."
Now it so happened that a sleeping genie dwelt at the bottom of that well. He could only be awakened by a spell, and although Rosie Red did not know it, the words she uttered, which she had heard her granny use, were the spell. The genie awoke, and he was so delighted with the sweet voice that he promptly decided to help the girl when he saw her peering down into the water. He fastened the bucket to the stick, and taking some jewels from a treasure of which he was the guardian, he put them aside.
"Oh, how beautiful!" cried Rosie Red when she saw the glittering gems. "They are so much nicer than those my sisters put on to go to the ball."
Then she sat thinking for a while, and a bright idea came into her head. "I will give these jewels to my sisters," she said. "Perhaps they will be kinder to me." She waited impatiently until the sisters returned from the dance and immediately told them. For a moment they were too dazed to speak when they saw the sparkling precious stones. Then they looked meaningfully at one another and asked her how she came by them. Rosie told them of the words she had sung.
"Ah, we thought so," said the sisters to her horror. "The jewels are ours. We hid them in the well for safety. You have stolen them."
In vain Rosie Red protested. Her sisters would not listen. They beat her severely and told her to hurry off to bed. And then, snatching the bucket, they hurried off to the well. They lowered the bucket and sang the words that Rosie Red had sung. At least, they thought they sang, but their voices were harsh. The sleeping genie awoke again, but he did not like the croaking sound the sisters made.
"Ha, ha," he laughed. "I will teach you to disturb my sleep with hideous noises, and shall punish such pranks played on me. Here are some more croakers," and he filled the bucket with slimy toads and frogs. The sisters were so enraged that they ran back home and dragged poor Rosie Red from her bed. "You cat, you thief," screamed one. "You cheat," exclaimed the other. "Off you go. Not another day can you remain in this house."
Rosie Red was too much taken by surprise to say anything. It was an outrage to turn her out of her father's house while he was away on a journey, but the thought came to her that she could hardly be less happy living alone in the woods. She had only time to snatch her pretty red slippers, and as soon as she was out of the sight of the house, she put them on. It made her feel less miserable. The sun was now rising, and when its rays shone on her, she began to sing. With her old friends, the birds, twittering all about her, she felt quite happy. On and on she walked, much farther into the woods than ever before. When she grew tired, there was always a pleasant shady nook where she could rest. When she became hungry, there were fruit trees in abundance, and when she was thirsty, she always came to a spring of clear, fresh water. The magic slippers guided her. All day long she wandered, and when toward evening she noticed her slippers were muddy, she took them off to clean. And then darkness fell. It began to rain, and she grew frightened. She crouched under a tree until she noticed a light some short distance away. She got up and walked toward it. When quite close, she saw that the light came from a cave dwelling. An old woman came out to meet her. It was her grandmother, but so many years had passed that Rosie Red did not recognize her. Granny, however, at once knew her. "Come in, my child, and take shelter from the rain," she said kindly, and Rosie Red was only too glad to accept the invitation. The inside of the cave was quite cozy, and Rosie Red, who was almost completely exhausted, quickly fell fast asleep. She awoke with a start. "My pretty red slippers," she cried. "Where are they?" She put her hand in the pocket of her tattered dress, but could only find one. "I must have lost the other," she sobbed. "I must go out and look for it." "No, no, child," said Granny. "You cannot do that. A storm is raging." Rosie Red peered out through the door of the cave and drew back in fear as she saw the lightning flash and heard the thunder rolling. She sobbed herself to sleep again, and this time was awakened by voices. She feared it might be her sisters who had discovered her hiding place and had come to drag her forcibly back home again, so she crept into a corner of the cave and listened intently. A man was speaking. "Know you to whom this red slipper belongs?" he was asking. "I found it in the woods." Rosie Red was on the point of rushing out to regain her lost slipper when her granny's voice, very loud on purpose that she should hear, restrained her. "No, no, I do not know. She repeated again and again, and at length the man departed. Granny came back into the cave and said, "I'm sorry, Rosie Red, but for aught I know, he might be a messenger from your cruel sisters, and of course I cannot let anyone take you back to them." Next day the man called again, this time with several attendants. Again Rosie Red concealed herself. "I am a chieftain's son, and wealthy," said the man. "I must find the wearer of this shoe. Only a graceful and beautiful girl can wear such a dainty slipper." Rosie Red did not know whether to be frightened or pleased when her granny told her the man was very handsome and of noble bearing. Day after day he came, each time with more retainers, and finally he arrived mounted on a richly caparisoned camel with 101 followers, all mounted as he was. "The girl I seek is here," he said. "Deny it no longer. My servants have scoured the woods and the whole neighborhood. One is prepared to swear he heard a young girl singing yesterday." Rosie Red saw that concealment was no longer possible. She liked the man's voice, and she stepped out bravely, wearing her one slipper. The stranger, bowing low before her, held out the other, and Rosie Red took it and put it on. It fitted perfectly. "Many girls have tried to put on that shoe, and I have sworn to make the wearer my bride. I am a chieftain's son, and thou shalt be my princess." So Rosie Red left the cave with her granny, and mounting a camel was led through the woods to her new home, where she knew naught but happiness, and the days of her sufferings were quite forgotten, and always she wore her magic red slippers. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at gima@kciw.org. See you next week, same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to Scotland, where bagpipers play and the men wear skirts called kilts. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading.